bank under Israeli assault. Talk about the situation where you are.
Yeah, I mean, we're still seeing images of children pulled from under the rubble. It's unthinkable to me that it's been more than 14 months now into this genocide, and we're still seeing the same images. It seems like we're powerless, and it seems like the world is content with letting this go on. And here in the West Bank, as we watch from Bethlehem what's happening, or Ramallah or Hebron, we wonder, are we next? Israel has made it clear they plan to annex the West Bank next year. What would this mean on the ground? Again, we live in this moment of anticipation, of anxiety, and at the same time, we're broken by the fact that the world seems content with letting this go without serious efforts to make it stop or put accountability and restraint on those who commit war crimes.
Reverend Munther Isaac, we thank you so much for being with us. Palestinian Christian theologian, pastor at the Evangelical Lutheran Christmas Church in occupied Bethlehem, where his Christmas sermon this year was titled, Christ is Still in the Rubble. He was speaking to us from Palestine. That does it for our show. A happy birthday to Yusra Razuki. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warrenup, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alcock, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Ravi Karen, Hani Masood, Hannah Elias. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. December's Governance and Policy Committee meeting will be rescheduled for January 21st at 6 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Don't know what to get your loved ones this season? Check out kboo.fm/merch to snag some KBOO swag to support community media in style. While you're shopping for gifts, you can make donations to help support KBOO's $75,000 goal for our Catalog of Connections year-end campaign, now through December 21st. And thank you.
Are listening to KBOO Community Radio, and this is KBOO News Year in Review. Between now and the new year, we'll be looking back at some of our favorite and most important stories from 2024. I'm Althea Billings, the news director. In this episode, we'll be looking back at our special election series, Running on Air. For 2.5 months, we put out a second daily show with a handful of the candidates from each district each day. It was an enormous amount of effort, but it paid off. We got a unique look into the personalities and policies that would come to lead Portland into its next chapter. Today, we're going back to the episodes that featured the winners from District 1, which represents East Portland. The winners from that district were Loretta Smith, Jamie Dunphy, and Candace Avalos. We'll be hearing from all of them. Before we get into the meat of today's episode, though, we want to thank everyone who has helped to contribute to our end-of-year membership drive so far. Our goal is to raise $75,000 before January 1st, and we can't do it without your help. The theme of the drive is Catalog of Connections, something KBOO News brings to you every weekday. Do you want to be connected to your community and the issues that matter most? That's what you tune into KBOO for. We can't do it without you. So if KBOO has meant something to you this year, consider supporting us with a donation. You can go online to kboo.fm/give to donate, or you can text KBOO to 44321. You can also mail us a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Thank you so much. Now on to the show. Loretta Smith was not a guest on Running On Air, but we did get a chance to catch up with her last week just before she was sworn in on Thursday. So I'm curious, these past few weeks you've been doing a lot of onboarding with your fellow counselors. What has that process been like?
It's been great. We've been getting briefed on how to, you know, write ordinances, the rules and the regulations, and, you know, learning about public records, how we have to do that, all the, you know, the little housekeeping things that we need to do. So it's been great, and it's really been giving us an opportunity to build a camaraderie amongst the council elects.
And, you know, unique to the council, you're somebody who has experience as a county commissioner. Do you have any thoughts about sort of how that applies here, or are there differences that you're noticing?
Well, there are differences because they're different budgets, but the process is the same. You need to get buy-in from folks and see if this is something, you know. My agenda has always been community-led, so every ordinance that I authored and passed in the county, it was all community-led, and so I knew I had the support of coalitions going forward.
Getting to know the other counselors, are there particular folks you're looking forward to working with or collaborating with?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to collaborating with my District 1 counselors, Candace Avalos and Jamie Dunphy. And actually, I'm really looking forward to collaborating with all the council elects, because maybe half of them I didn't know before, but now I've gotten an opportunity to meet them. And they're actually very smart, intentional, deliberate, passionate, and that's what I like. I like to work with folks who are passionate about stuff. It's not just, you know, a job, or, you know, that this is important, that we give voice to people and communities in a way that we have not done before, in a very meaningful way. And I think you're going to get this with this council. They're very intentional, so I'm excited about serving with them.
Well, you're getting sworn in today, and in 2 weeks, it's on, it's real, it's happening. What are your day one priorities?
Well, the first thing that we have to do, according to our charter, is that we have to pick a president first. So that's the first thing that we're going to do.
Is that a role you're interested in?
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. I'm smart enough to know that I don't want to be the president. The issue for me is, right now, my priority is to get East Portland district offices, like the charter said, and the GTAC said that they should do. Because for the people in East Portland, many of you don't know, our district starts at 82nd, and it ends at 162nd going east, right on the Gresham border. So for me, we're having a new front door to the city of Portland. East Portland is the new front door to the city of Portland. It is a new constituency. It is a new opportunity for people in the most vulnerable district to have access and have a seat at the table. And so for my heart to be happy, I want to make sure that all these folks have a seat at the table. And they will, while I'm representing them.
I wanted to ask about district offices in this sort of onboarding phase and talking with folks. Is that something that other counselors share concerns with? Any updates on what we might see happen?
I don't know. We've talked about it. We've talked about, you know, getting offices, and everybody really has been great about understanding why I'm pushing district offices, because I'm the furthest east. And when people think to come downtown to talk to their city council person, it is a process. And a lot of folks don't have cars. People, they'd have to take off work. If you want them to testify, be a part of an advisory committee. But if they have any kind of concern or difficulty, they're worried about a pothole in the street, a street light. We have a lot of folks who have been fighting for Vision Zero. You know, we have traffic, pedestrian traffic accidents like no other district in District 1. So I would like them to have an opportunity to have an office they can go to in their district. And that's what the people wanted, so.
Right. I mean, this is a big moment for East Portland, like you said, getting representation, three great voices on City Council. What does it mean to you?
Personally, it means a whole lot to me. I have three grandchildren that live in East Portland. And I want them to have an opportunity not just to survive in the city, I want them to thrive. And I want them to feel like they have a voice to be anything they want to do in this city. And I would really be kicking myself if I had not tried. I told someone, I feel like I'm the Susan Lucci of this group. Susan Lucci was, for those of you who don't know, she played Erica Kane on All My Children, and she tried to get an Emmy every year, and she kept losing and kept losing. And so I said, I'm the Susan Lucci and the Nick Fish, because Nick Fish ran three times before he became a city councilor. And so I say that to say my commitment to this community and my commitment to make this city grow and have East Portland be a part of that new front door. And having us be the new front door, there's going to be new faces. There are going to be new issues. There are going to be new opportunities for us to have traded sector businesses to do something about the unsanctioned RVs and camping that's going on, and to be able to put people into shelters at night. So I'm really excited about Mayor-elect Wilson, because it is so inhumane to leave folks in camps, on the street, on the sidewalks, sleeping. That's not cool.
Yeah. Well, one last question for you. Any last words for the people of Portland going into this new year, the new city government? What should they expect? What should they hold on to?
No, they should expect that we're going to give people opportunity to have access. And just know, if there's something that you need, call my office. I've already staffed up with one staffer, we have two staffers right now. So I believe that it begins and ends with them. This is not my agenda. This is the people's agenda.
Loretta, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That was Portland District 1 Councilor Loretta Smith. Now we'll hear from the other two winners from District 1, Jamie Dunphy and Candace Avalos, from their respective episodes of Running on Air.
For listening to KBOO Portland, you're listening to Running on Air, produced at KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Sam Bowman, and I'm just going to go clockwise here and have everybody introduce yourselves and maybe tell us a little bit about your history in Portland and what encouraged you to run for City Council. Jamie Dunphy.
Excellent. Thank you guys so much for having me. My name is Jamie Dunphy. I am a longtime public servant in this community. I moved to Portland to go to Grant High School back in 98, and I have not been able to leave since. I really love this community, and I spent my 20s and 30s growing up here, and I'm mostly spending the last 20 years in public service working for I worked in the David Douglas School District in outer southeast Portland doing gang prevention in a middle school. I wanted to be a teacher. That was always my goal. But I couldn't do it. I wasn't brave enough to be a teacher. And so I changed my degree and I went to go work in public policy, and I wanted to change the system. And so I spent 10 years working for some of the best elected officials, I would argue, that our regions had. I worked for U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley for 5 years. Senator Merkley is wonderful to work for. Congress is terrible to work for. And I spent 5 years working as senior policy director to Commissioner Nick Fish, who we all know passed away from stomach cancer back in January of 2020. And at that moment, when Nick passed during the COVID pandemic, I took an opportunity to leave public service. And I've been working for the last 4 years for the American Cancer Society as the statewide lobbyist, mostly focusing on tobacco control. But I'm running for city council, honestly, because I think I have some skills and experience that would really be helpful in making sure that this new system of government actually works. We have a long track record of voting for really interesting, forward-looking pieces of legislation and then completely screwing it up on implementation. And I think we can't afford to have the next city council learn on the job. So I think that my skills might actually be helpful in making that happen. And despite my better instincts, I am running for city council District 1.
Well, good evening. I'm Candace Avalos, she, her pronouns, and I'm running for Portland City Council because I just believe in our potential, and I have shown my love for the city by being part of helping to solve our biggest problems. A little bit about me, though. I am originally from Virginia, also moved in 2013 to Portland to be an educator. My family, I come from an immigrant family, Guatemalan immigrants on one side of my family, African Americans from Southern Virginia on the other, and started out my career as an educator. So I feel like that also is just a big part of my theory of change. I believe that everybody is a seed that needs watering, and I'm running because I believe that government needs to be watering our community. I think that looks a lot of different ways, but one angle that I come at it from is from my environmental justice lens as the executive director of Verde. We do a lot of work in East Portland, like ensuring that we're getting folks access to cooling devices, making sure that we're investing in infrastructure. And those are the kinds of things that, you know, the experiences, whether that be my executive experiences as a nonprofit director or my advocacy experience as somebody who sat on the Charter Commission, sat on the Police Accountability Board, helped move forward some big progressive changes. And so I'm hoping that between those two things and just my community-minded leadership, I can bring some much-needed representation to East Portland. Thank you.
Great. Thank you all for that. And I want to just talk about, you know, what to me at least is maybe the most exciting part of this. I've been living in Portland since 2011. I moved here from Illinois, and back there we had a very ward-based system everywhere that I lived. Every part of a city had its own representatives. And it always struck me and rankled me a little bit to know that a huge swath of the city that I live in does not have representation on the city council that we currently have pretty much the entire time that I've lived here and for decades before that, east of the river, let alone east of 82nd. What excites you the most about the ability to represent such an underrepresented part, but such a huge and disproportionate part of Portland?
Even when the city does invest in our community, they do it either from afar without real meaningful input from the community members who are going to be impacted by it, or they do it half-assed. They plant trees and don't have a plan for how to water them. They install protected bike lanes, and they don't they actually increase the number of pedestrian and bicyclist accidents that happen. We need follow through. People in our community, not only are they underserved, but they are disenchanted from or disenfranchised from the system and are completely disconnected. The number of doors that I've knocked on where people don't even know that there's an election happening is shocking. And those folks really need to know. We know that somebody from 145th and Division is simply not going to go downtown to complain about a pothole. We need to go to them, and this is an opportunity to revolutionize how we do service delivery in the system and community representation, and make sure that the lives of the people who are actually going to be affected by these policies and these decisions and these dollars are actually at the table.
Yeah, as somebody who sat on the Charter Commission and spent several years researching good governance and just trying to understand what makes for a more inclusive representative democracy, it was obvious that geographic representation was a huge part of that puzzle. And for East Portland, you know, when I'm knocking on doors and talking to voters out there, 9 times out of 10, it's the first time anyone has ever talked to them from the quote-unquote government or from, you know, people seeking to earn their vote to represent them. Because people didn't have to. They didn't have to canvass in East Portland. All of the political power is really concentrated on the inner east side and on the west side. And that is why our representatives have mostly come from there. And that is why those are parts of town that have seen more resources over the years that East Portland hasn't. And so this opportunity is golden for East Portland in particular, because we have a lot of catching up to do to the rest of the city, especially as it relates to basic infrastructure. And, you know, it's very clear that we have neglected our streets. We've neglected our communities as a whole. And so I think that this is, you know, it's going to take some time for East Portlanders to, you know, understand this new change and how it's going to impact them. So, you know, I'm really eager to, you know, get through this election and then continue building on the grassroots community power that we're all doing by being out there and talking to voters. I think Portland, or I think East Portland, is going to benefit the most from that. And so I'm eager to see us continue those strategies as electeds.
Yeah, I just want to say one more thing. I was actually a little talking point that it's a combination of two talking points. One, I read this in the Willamette Week a few years ago, and it's stuck in my brain ever since. It's that people think that 82nd Avenue is the eastern border of the city, but it's actually the geographic center. And the second is that roughly 65% of all the city council candidates who are city council members who have ever been elected come from the West Hills. And from only in the entire combined history of Portland, only two people have ever been elected from east of 82nd. On January 1st, we will have more representation in City Hall than the entire collective history of Portland.
That is quite a fact. Speaking of January, we're not just looking at more representation, we're looking at an entirely new way of doing government in Portland and way of organizing how ordinances are created and carried out. The combination of different elements is unique in the nation, and there's also a lot of leeway given to new commissioners to collectively kind of create a lot of their own process. And I think one interesting part of that I think is already exemplified by the way that we're talking here is that you're not necessarily in competition with each other right now. You're running both sort of against and in more sense with each other to be one of three candidates on the commissioners on the council representing District 1. How do you plan to both represent the needs of District 1 and collaborate with your fellow commissioners to, like, carry out and help create this new system that's going to be a big part of the city for many years?
I started part of my public service career, my work working in elected office with Jeff Merkley's office as constituent services, specifically helping individuals who were trying to get results out of complicated forms of government. The current proposal for the new city council is focused on collaboration within City Hall and trying to count to 7 votes on every single thing that you can. But each of the city commissioners or city council members are only going to have one staff as of right now. I want to dedicate as much of my time and resources and my energy towards constituent focus and really doing constituent services in the district, trying to empower those families who we know are not going to go downtown to complain about their potholes, trying to meet people where they are in the first place and not expect people to come to us. I think the opportunity for representation and to be able to get meaningful results out of those systems just by showing up and being present and knowing that that is an ongoing dedicated part of our jobs is really important. I think you're exactly right also that I don't feel in competition with these two amazing candidates sitting next to me. I feel as though whatever is going to happen in this election, we're going to be in a great place in East Portland because there is so much talent that is fighting to try and represent them. I hope that I get to be one of those three, but I feel exceptionally optimistic right now about our future.
One of the things that the new council will be tasked with, in addition to creating an entirely new way of working in the framework that was set up by the Charter Review Commission, recently the federal judge, Michael Simon, pushed back the implementation date for the city's police accountability system that was voted on by voters in 2020. And has been kind of in the creation stage for the last 3 to 4 years. You pushed back the implementation date from sometime this or next month to January when the new council will be seated. And so that could be one, two, or all of you. How would you implement that system within the strictures that you've been given to do so?
For context, so I was the chair of the old system's Police Accountability Board. So I was on the Citizen Review Committee for 7 years and chaired it for four. And I was also a part of the coalition of folks that crafted and passed that measure in 2020. I think it was such an awesome way for us to mobilize quickly on a moment and take advantage of making some real progress, and that's what that measure did. So I, in general, I'm very supportive of us, you know, seeing that through. The judge made that decision, and you know, funnily enough, because I'm still friends with all the people in the old system, they're like, we hate that because, you know, we really were wanting to transition this out because we've just kind of been in limbo for so long. But I am okay with the decision because honestly, the current people on our council have been hostile to police reform efforts, police accountability efforts. And so I think that, you know, what I'm assuming is the thinking behind his decision is to ensure that this new council that's going to be representative of the community is going to have to, like you say, we're going to have to change everything about how we govern and interact. So why not implement that at the same time? I see the logic there. And so I really don't think the couple of months, you know, in delay is really going to make much of a difference, especially given how many years it's been that we've been trying to implement this. As far as implementing it, I mean, I'm not 100% sure on like the current status of the exact language because, you know, the commission spent many years working on that, and then the city attorneys basically cut a bunch of it off. And so I don't know right now, so it's hard to say, like, I would implement it exactly as is because I need to look more deeply at what state it's in right now and what, you know, I guess what the judge approved. But as far as how I would implement it, I mean, ultimately, I think it's an important part of also the new structure because we made it so that, one, the police chief is being overseen by the mayor, understanding that that is just such a sensitive part of our governance and government's power, having a police force and how they're wielding that responsibly for the people is really important. So we wanted to keep that accountability up at the mayor level. And I think, you know, the goal of this is to ensure, you know, we keep talking about community trust with police. Community trust does not happen without accountability. So until we establish a strong system that can really, truly, you know, at least two from my, let me step back and say real quick, from my opinion, a lot of the cases that I heard when I was on the Citizen Review Committee were kind of like miscommunications. You know, these were issues where bringing people together and saying, hey, you know, as an officer, this thing that you did harmed this person, it caused this, this, and that. And then just being like, okay, let's repair that. Unfortunately, in my experience, police have been even resistant to things like that. And so I feel like that's what is going to be our task, is how do we implement a system of accountability to a police force that has notoriously been resistant to it. But I think that we'll have the tools with the new form of government to do so.
I want to get into some more specific policy stuff and issues. And well, I have my own questions, but I'd like to let you kind of open that up. Is there one issue that you feel like is crucial for Portland to address in the next 4 years while you may be on the council, or an issue that you think does not get enough attention currently?
The crises that are happening on our streets are the defining issues of our times right now, that we have multiple crises unfolding on the streets at the same time. I think we all acknowledge that calling it homelessness when it's actually five or six different things is just a limitation of our language. Each of those five or six different things, whether it's mental illness, whether it's economic instability, whether it is addiction, each of those things requires a nuanced and specific approach. And as a region, we have failed all of those approaches. And we need to acknowledge that that failure is leading to not only suffering on the street, it is inhumane to allow our neighbors to sleep on the streets and in parks, in tents, and without access to healthcare, without access to addiction services. It's inhumane to allow that to happen in our country. At the same time, we have to acknowledge that the failure to address those issues has made it so that parents do not feel safe to send their kids to the park for fear of stepping on a needle. And we have to be able to acknowledge both of those things. We have to both meaningfully and intensely deliver services to people who are suffering on the streets and need that, and have alternatives to shelters, and trying to get access to the people who want to get clean and people who want to have health and mental health assistance. And at the same time, we need to clean up public parks and plazas and business districts, and we need to activate them, and we need to put opportunities for community to grow. I think that we cannot simply be focusing on constantly cleaning up and responding to the scariest and worst situations in our community. We also need to, at the same time, inspire something for the community to try and build towards, because there's no amount of cops that we can have that will patrol up and down Hawthorne Boulevard at 1 a.m. that will have the same effect on public safety as a concert getting out at 1 a.m. and people walking up and down sidewalks and visiting businesses and bars and restaurants. We are what can actually make this community safe, and that's how we bring positive opportunities to public spaces to encourage good behavior and at the same time discourage bad behavior.
So another sort of more specific issue that some of you have brought up already is climate change and the effects that climate change is having on the city of Portland. Think just of the heat dome of the past few years, the repeated heat waves and ice storms, and the fact that East Portland itself is traditionally lacking in tree cover. What are some ways that the city council and that you on the city council could address those issues as they continue to unfold? Candace?
Yeah, I think what's important to remember about climate change is that it is not in the future, it is now. And the decisions that we make in growing our city are all climate related, because when the number one and number two emitters of greenhouse gases are transportation and buildings, then when we're talking about the investments in infrastructure, like making sure that we have more bus lanes, making sure that we have tree canopy, all of these things, how we're, you know, we all know that we have a housing crisis and we need to expedite housing production. And there's been some discussions this year in the city council where it was like, well, maybe we could loosen these environmental regulations and that'll help us build faster. And that is not the right approach, right? Because we have to build into the future, and building into the future means including climate protections for residents. And so I think